Mr. David Butler, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about your time with HMS Raleigh, but I believe while you were there, you actually had a sea attachment for a period.
It wasn't a sea attachment as such. There was a destroyer, which I can't think of the name of, but in the dockyard, used to be attached to HMS Raleigh, and it was alongside the Sunbeam base HMS Montclair, which was a depot ship. And we used to go on, you went down to this ship Monday to Friday, I think it was, and then my memory serves me right, and you spent a week having a look round and working as a stoker on the ship. You wasn't part of the ship's company or nothing, you had to do your watches. You'd done your watches and you'd done your night shift and you'd done a little bit of firefighting and general maintenance work on the ship to give you an idea of what you was going to do when you got out into the big wide world of the Royal Navy.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. It was interesting, actually, because I'd been on a couple of Navy ships during the war when we went down to Salsey, and my uncle worked in the dockyard. One of my uncles worked in the dockyard, you see, and he got me to let me have a look around the ship in the war. Okay, albeit an hour. But at least it gave me an insight and I knew what I was looking at. And
did
I was looking in that
respect.
Did you
go to sea or was it just in harbour?
No, it was just tied up in harbour. Just tied up, it was anchored fore and aft to a platform, and then alongside, on the other side of it, was the Montclair, the submarine depot ship, which I later met in Rosyth, I think it was. Some years later in Rosyth.
Now, anything else about this course? I mean, you were there till December. We checked the thing. Anything else? A 6-month course, basically. Anything else you remember before we finish?
I don't think so. We just done the. We had a chief stoker looking after us. I can't think of his name now. Not a bad bloke, Chalmers. Chief Pit Officer Chalmers. He wasn't a bad bloke, but we didn't do much. Once you're in the engineering world, you don't have much training. But then you have your last fortnight, you're winding up for your passionate pride.
Now, did you have any exams before the passionate?
Yes, you have exams on everything.
Now, what are the exams like?
Well, I suppose in some respects to us, they was a bit hard, being novices, like, you know. But it's just on what you was taught, how the boiler works, drawing plans of the boilers, talking about evaporators, turbo generators, diesels, and the general topics that you would learn not as an apprentice, because it'd be a bit, that would be a bit more technical, but the basics of how things work and how the steam works and drawing the steam lines and things like that. You might have a plan of drawing a steam line to do or something like that, but it was such a long time ago, it's a bit difficult to bring it back into shape.
And was there a practical element to it? I mean, or was it all paper
exams? Oh, now you've got... No, I don't think there was no practical element at all. I think the practical element was done on the destroyer just on the Raleigh side of the dockyard.
Now, what about the passing out parade? What was that like? Was it a big do?
Brilliant, yeah. Don't ask me who we had passing us out, but we was up at 5 in the morning. And you had an early breakfast, and then you got into your kit, and you was in your kit by 6, uniform, number one uniform, best boots polished, gaiters on, and all that jazz. And then you'd done a bit of routine drilling on the edge of the parade ground, and then they marched you across to the what they called the drill shed. If it was raining on the parade ground, you couldn't do it, so you went into this drill shed. And we went in there, and when we got in there, that is when the gunnery instructors took over. The people that Navy don't, the blokes in the Navy don't really like, because they can be some swines. Not nastily, but marching you up and down and teaching you to do the right thing, and if you get it wrong, then you get told off, politely, in Navy terms. And then they take over, and then eventually, about 8 o'clock, you're issued with your rifle for the passing out parade. And I've got to think the passing out parade was about 10. But then you've done some rifle drill, which is natural. You do your slope arms, shoulder arms, present arms, which is you do when the captain and all that walk on with the honoured guest, and then about half past nine, you can see the parents and that coming down. Because we live so far away, I never had any parents coming down. One or two did. They had parents come down to see them off, to see them pass out. But on the whole, it was good. It was hard work. It's hard work getting onto the parade ground. And you're on the parade ground approximately an hour before the honoured guest comes. So you're standing around, and it don't matter whether it's windy or rain, you're standing there. And then, hold on, I have to go back now. You do colours. Each morning on the parade ground, they do colours, which is done by the ship's company people. This time, the ship's company people have already taught some of us to do colours, and we do the colours, and we present arms. We use our rifles to do it. I forgot that little bit. And that's how, and then you have to, and you're doing that at 8 o'clock with the pipe and the officer of the watch and all that coming down to see you. And the one thing I remember about the passing out parade is that we had a commander at rally with a ginger beard, and he was one of the few men that you got in the Navy that dragged his sword. You didn't get many of them, and that stems back, I think, from the Nelson days. Or Queen Victoria's days.
What was the significance of it? I'm not aware of that.
Well, from what I've been told, I've never read, never chased it up. I've been idle in that respect. I must admit, I know. But I believe that it was they didn't stand up when Queen Victoria came on board a ship one day, and apparently it was because it was a low deckhead. They was on an old one of the oldest ships. And it was a low deckhead, and the officers didn't have room to stand up properly when she entered. So they all sat. And I was told that from then on she said, "You will drag your swords." And I think that might be the idea of why there's that belt. They wear the Sam Brown or Sam Brown waist belt. And then they've got a belt that goes from there to a special hook on the sword. And they carry the sword. Not like the army and the RAF when they have it up on the waist, carry it on the waist belt. But I think that was the story. I may be wrong, and I could get slapped wrist for that.
But How did the parade go then?
The parade went very well. We'd done our marching up and down. We'd done our drill with our rifles, and we'd done inspection. And then they took us to the end of the parade ground. Now, by this time, everybody's joined. All the classes have joined for the march past, and they're all on the parade ground in the number ones. It's like having the divisions, really, what you used to have on board a ship. It's the divisions, the proper divisions, and they're all inspected, not by the officers. They're just inspected by their own divisional officer, who's their course officer and one thing and another. They're inspected by them, and then we lead the parade going for the march past. You come from one side of the parade, you walk right up to the far end, and then you swing into line, and then you march past with your guns on the thing. I was being a tall lad, I was right hand man, so I was able to keep my eyes to the front all the time, but the others had to turn their heads to the right when they marched past for the salute. And then all the other divisions followed you across the parade. And then you'd march. You went back into the centre of the parade ground again, and you was then inspected by the. No, we'd already been inspected by him, but then he gave a speech and welcomed us into the Royal Navy as proper sailors and all that jazz that goes on with this, and then he left the parade ground. We was marched into the drill shed where we fell out. And the rest of the training group was dismissed on the parade ground itself.
Now, were you by then a stoker or still a stoker in the trade?
I was a stoker then. We'd after that passing out parade, you become a stoker, but in theory, you're still under training until you get when you're on your ship, you get on your ship, you're under training until you become a Stoker mechanic.
Now, you then go to HMS Victory. That's the barracks at...
That's the Royal Naval Barracks at Portsmouth, while you're awaiting a draft.
Anything about... You were only there about 6 days. Anything about that?
Yeah, it was boring. It was boring doing mess decks, sweeping up mess decks and just trying to find your little jobs to do. Because they know you've all got jobs. You've got drafts because you join there. The first thing they do is they give you a draft when you get there.
So nothing special about that.
No. It's a holding base, as you might say.
Now the next thing is a big posting, and that you go to HMS Vanguard.
Yeah.
Still in December.
Yeah.
And you're with her until October 54th.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Now. What did you think when you heard you'd got the posting to Vanguard? Because she was a famous ship then.
Oh, she was, yeah. I was excited because I thought, oh, I'm going on a Royal ship. This is carrying royalty. And I thought, gee, well, I wonder what that'll be like. That'll be big. But it was a good ship. I enjoyed it. Once I got on there and got into the ship's company and become part of the ship's company and whatever,
and what was your reception
like when
you joined her? Where did you join her at?
In Portsmouth. Joined her in Portsmouth. And she'd just come back from the Arctic. From being up the Arctic. Every autumn, she went up to the Arctic. And I joined her in Portsmouth. My first job...
Hang on, how did they sort of take you aboard? You know, you're a young lad arriving.
There was a group of us. I can't remember how many of us, but I'm going to say it was in double figures. And we joined, and we went up. We was taken, told to put our leave our hammocks, kit bags, and everything on the upper deck, and just away from the gangway. And the quartermaster would look after them. Then we was taken around to the regulating office, which was on the opposite side of the ship. And there we was given our mess number, and joining card. Which you have on ships of that sort, big ships of that sort, and they said, right, go and get your kit bags and hammocks, and they told us where each individual mess was, and they sent for some of the stokers that was already on the ship, and the chief stoker came up as well. That's right, the chief stoker came up with about four other blokes, and he said, right, these lads will take you down to your mess deck. I was mess 38, I think it was, starboard side.
And that was a stoker's mess deck?
That was a stoker's mess deck, yeah.
Can you describe that mess deck, like a stoker's mess deck on the Vanguard, or that one? What was it like?
Well, all the stoker's messes were around the boiler room, engine room area, on both sides of the ship. You came down the ladder in the dining hall flat, what we called the dining hall flat at the time. You came from the upper deck, down the ladder to the dining hall flat where they served you the food and that. Then you went round then, just round this ladder that you'd come down, and you went down the next ladder, which took you into the engine room flat. And then I went through this door. I think I was the only one that went into 38 mess. I do believe I was the only one that went into 38 mess. So I went in through this doorway, and this is a step-over doorway, proper step-over doorway, and then I turned left into the mess itself. There was lockers on the right-hand side, lockers in front of me, and then I walked into a big square, and there was two tables with two benches and some seats down the outside. Three benches. There was a bench on this side, and then there was a couple of little settees type, although they was built in settee type things, no arms on them, mind you, but dotted around in little holes that had nothing. You couldn't put nothing in except a seat or a couple of seats, and that was basically it. And I was shown me locker, shown where I slung me hammock. And then they said, right, put your kit away. And then when you leave here, turn right through the doorway, turn left, go across the passageway, turn left again through the next bulkhead, And the chief circus officer was on the right. And I said, and you've got 10 minutes. And then we went round, and then they, and then we went, I went round there, and we all got there pretty similar, I think. And then we was given, I think these four stokers that was already on board. A bloke in Air Mess was one of them. I didn't know he was in Air Mess at the time. I think it was Jack Gardner. He come from Oxford. He showed half a dozen of us, took us around the ship then to do our joining routine. And when you're doing your joining routine, you've got the regulating office, the gunnery office, your divisional office, engineer's office, and one or two other places. I can't remember all of them, but that's the stuff that it matters on the ship.
So on a joining routines, you go around them?
You go around the ship, and they take you around. While they're taking you around, they're telling you about a little bit about the thing. Sick bay was another one we had to go to. And you're learning the ship at the same time, although you're amazed at the size of it and what it really looks like. Because when you think about it, we've only been on a destroyer or a little frigate type ship. The Vanguard was vast. And I think the middle deck where the galley was, the galley and the dining hall flat, I think the steel in there was 12 inches thick. Oh, God, I can't remember now. Whether it was 9 or 12 inches thick, steel plate, solid steel. It went all the way from the forepeak to the after deck, to the officers' quarters. But I think it was about 9 to 12, it was either 9 or 12 inches thick, this deck.
Now, I should have picked up, how are you getting on with the hammock? I mean, had you slept in one before?
Yes, you'd slept on it in the dockyard, you see, when you was on that little ship in the dockyard, because in them days, nobody had bunks. And everybody slept in a hammock, except the officers, of course.
Now, what did you think of the hammock?
I loved them. It was so comfortable. I've got to say, it was bloody a laugh trying to get into the first couple of times, But once you was in, and you had a mattress in there, and what have you, and it was. Once you got used to it, it was the most comfortablest bed you could ever wish for. It was, and as high and as tight as possible. Between the hammock itself and the deckhead, you might have about 6 inches at the most, unless there was a pipe running across. Unless you had a pipe running through your hammock, as you might say, just above it, and then you slept under this pipe. You see, I think I had a pipe in the mess deck. I think I had a fire main pipe, which carried the water for fighting fires. But I think it was about 6 inches. You got about 6 inches between. And then once you got your body in, you see, your hammock sank down. And you had plenty of room. But it was lovely. Absolutely gorgeous sleeping in a hammock. It was.
Now, what was a typical... I mean, when you settled in, what was like the routine like?
Well, the first thing was next morning, it was... I think we joined in the afternoon, so I'm going to say next morning. It was round to the chief stoker's office, and he explained to us what a watch bill was. Although we'd had some training in
things. What was a watch bill?
A watch bill is there's four parts in a watch bill. There's the port. Well, it starts off with two parts, the starboard and the port. But then they're broken down into part one and part two. So it's you in starboard watch one, or starboard watch two, port watch one, or port watch two. That gives you 4 days duties and four or one complete 24 hours duties, whatever the case may be. And then you was given, then you was told who your divisional officer was, because he was in charge of one of the watches. Each part of the four was called a watch. And you'd be on the starboard watch one, starboard one. But if you was on the, when you started work down below in the boiler room and engine room, you was just starboard watch. You never went one and two. You became starboard watch. And because the four parts relate basically to when you're in harbour, so that you're on one day and then you're off for 3 days. And I don't mean only, that means evenings or probably afternoons if you're going to make a mend. And then you're told your divisional officer, and then you're told the chief, on such a big ship as this, you was told who your chief of your department was, and then you was told who your PO of your department was. Then you was given where you was going to work as a body. I was sent down the boiler rooms. I think I was in B boiler room, because we had four boiler rooms and four engine rooms.
Now, what were your duties in B boiler room?
Just general, when you're in harbour, if you were say stopping, you might B boiler room. It might be the last one to shut down when the thing. But when you was in harbour, it was just general maintenance, keeping the place clean and tidy, doing any painting that was required of the pipes, and if there was the dockyard coming or the engine room artificers wanted to work. Stripping off the lagging off the pipes, or helping them carry their toolboxes or their tools around, and generally helping them keeping the bilges clean. If they got water in, they was pumped out, and then you had to wipe them out and clean them. And if sometimes, occasionally, once, I can't remember the rotor now, but once every so often you had to clean the boilers, and that was a job and a half.
I'll come back to that. So that was in harbour.
In harbour. When you're at sea, you're doing the same type of thing. Excuse me, you're doing the same type of thing, morning, noon, and night. Don't matter what watch you're on. You're keeping a general, but you're more down there for putting the sprayers on that the petty officer requires, or the engine room, the captain. You start at the captain basically, because if he says he wants 10 more knots, then you've got to put 10 more pounds worth of oil into the boiler to keep that, to maintain that 10 knots. So it starts with the captain, down to the thing, and the telegraph, and it all comes down to the engine room. They start opening the valve. You know what's happening in the boiler, which you've got the gauges. You've got a couple of gauges in there for the engine room and from the telegraph. And so when they say, well, we want 10 more knots, so we'll say that's 20 revs. And you know very well that your steam's going to alter in them days. And then they will tell you which sprayer to put on. There's a rotor you put the sprayers on in these type of boilers there was. And he give you the signal, and he increase the air pressure, increase the fuel pressure to maintain the steam at 500 psi. 520 tops. If it went to 520, then it lifted the whistle. It used to raise the safety valve. So you didn't have a lot to play with, and that was it. Basically, you looked after the sprayers, which fed the boiler, which boiled the water. And there was two boilers down each boiler room.
Anything? Yeah. Nothing. That's it, really. Let's see.
Well, that was it. Basically, you had the petty officer of the watch, who was in charge of the boilers. You had a leading hand of the watch, who was in charge of the evaporators. No, I tell a lie. Stop that. The evaporators were in a separate compartment. You had a leading hand of the watch who used to sit up on the upper deck, not on the upper gratings, watching the level of boiler water. The level in the boiler. Because in them days, you never had gauges down below like we did later on in life. You had to have a bloke sitting up there. Sometimes it was a PO, other times it would be a leading hand. And he used to sit up there, and all his job was to watch the water level in the boilers. If it was steady, he'd probably do a bit of painting, or he'd do a little jobs up there that he thought he'd do, polishing the bright work and or what have you. And then you had, and that was it. That was it. And when you was a stoker, you used to have to take readings off the. You had a turbo generator. Did we? No, we didn't. We didn't have a turbo generator on the Vanguard. They was in separate compartments as well. I'm trying to think what they had. Two fans. You used to check the oil on the fans. You said, once an hour, you check the oil on the fans. And I go, oh, I can't think what we... And I can't think really think what we used to do there.
That's all right. Now, what about this? We sort of dodged it because it's a bigger job. But what about... You talked about cleaning boilers before, but not in... What about cleaning the Vanguard boilers when she was in harbour? So, would it be in harbour only?
Unless it was a real emergency. No, you'd only do it in harbour. That was a job where you... You'd empty the boiler out. The boiler would be emptied, and it came up every so often. And you would empty the boiler out of water, and then you'd knock the doors in and take them out of the drums, the two bottom drums, and then you had two bottom drums and you had a top drum. And you'd knock the things in. While all this was going on, other people were doing maintenance on valves and things like that. And you was... A gang of eight, I think, we used to do to cleaning the boilers. And you would get in the drum. There'd be one of you in each drum, and you'd be wiping it down to get all the water, rust, condensation, and everything out. And then it would be inspected by an ERA, who was apt to be trained as a boiler maker, or the engineer. An engineer might come down and do it. But there's always, nearly always an engineer floating around when you were doing a boiler clean. And then if there was anything wanted doing, they would say, right, tidy this up or tidy that up inside the drum itself. And then you had some fun. Because you had two sets of ball bearings, which had to be counted every time you used them. They was brought down from the engineer's ready-use store in a box, two boxes, and they was counted. They was then taken up to the top drum of the boiler, and they was counted again. Then they was taken inside the top drum of the boiler, and they was counted again. In the meantime, you have climbed into the boiler at the bottom, in one of the bottom drums, the port or the starboard one, whichever the case may be. Don't forget there's two boilers, and so you'd be, we'll say we're working on the starboard one, so you'd get in and there'd be one on the outboard and one on the inboard side of the boiler, and you'd have a small cradle in your hand. And then the leading hand, always a leading hand in the top drum, he used to drop the balls down the tubes. Now, the rotor was that you dropped them down so that they went down the side. And they was like that. Coming down. In other words, you started what we call the back of the boiler, and you worked towards the front. And you started at the top and of one set of tubes, and you finished at the bottom of it at the same set, so you knew exactly how to catch it. It's good me doing this, ain't it, with me hands.
It's all right.
And nobody can see it.
I think, but anyway, you're explaining it well enough.
But anyway, and then, but occasionally they would drop one down one of the other ones, so that you'd got an earful or a belly full of one ball bearing, and they always had a story, you know, it slipped out my answer. And then, and so eventually, you see, they'd done the rubber tubes, and then you'd pass this cradle, this little cradle out that you had, about as big as that coffee table top it was, and you'd pass this bag out, and then they was then counted. And no more balls comes down the tubes then, but they was counted. And if there was one missing, nine times out of ten it's in your ovals, because that's the one that sits you in the belly or somewhere on the top of your head or something like that. And then you'd find that.
Now, why? I think it's obvious, but why did you have to be so careful? You'd not let run in there.
Because it could have got stuck in a tube, and if there was a blockage in a tube, and the balls never, and there was, and there was only, we'll say there's 24 in a box, and when they used to say up top, box empty. They used to say, right, take that down to the bottom, come it down, bring that down to the tube, the boiler, the water drum I was in, and there was only 23 came out. You had to find that 24th one. Now, if there was a blockage in a tube, you had to then you had to search it with a wire rod. Search all the tubes that you'd done, even if you was 3/4 of the way through the boiler. If you was 3/4 of the way through the boiler, you still had to do all the tubes just to be certain. And you had to find that one bore, because that would create a blockage of the circulation of water, which would mean that that tube would burn out with the intense heat of it, because the water wasn't circulating, or the steam wasn't circulating through it all the time.
And what might that do? Cause an explosion and or just wreck it?
That would not only wreck it, but it would cause an explosion. It wouldn't cause an explosion as such, but you would find that water would drip. Not necessarily drip, but gush into the boiler, you see, and it would ruin all the brickwork and put the flames out and do all sorts of things. And you'd see it straight away as soon as you looked in the boiler, because you had to, every so often, you used to look at, you had a little glass, square thing with a handle on, and it had coloured glass in that you could flick a little clip on the side and look into the furnace, but you had to look through this glass. Because the simple fact, it would dazzle you and probably damage your eyes, and to see if the flames was all right. And you soon got to learn what the flame looked like. But if there was water, you'd see it would reflect on the brickwork at the back of the boiler, if there was water in actually in the furnace, because it would make it go very shiny.